ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர்க், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் என்ட்யூரிங் ஹாப்பினஸ், குரல் சாப்டர்ஸ் 1-4, பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க் யூ. Om Namah Shivaya.
Good morning, everyone. I'm working on another article for Mauritius. As you know, we have an opportunity there to have a full page every month in Vanakkam newspaper. Dr. Pillai has offered that to us for this year, so we have 6 articles so far done. This is the 7th. And it's a remaking of a pub desk on happiness. Happiness, that's an important concept for everyone. So we're trying in these articles to be practical so that everyone who reads the article, as well as everyone who hears it, it's also the basis for the first Sunday of the month gathering at the Spiritual Park, which is getting quite a few hundred people now on a regular basis. It's also the basis for the talk that's given there. And so it's trying to give someone something to do to improve their life. And then at the end, we'll share the lesson of the day. So I was kind of inspired and I put this together yesterday, happiness, and then I opened the lesson of the day. And of course, it's how to be happy, right, from Gurudeva. Said, that's very interesting. Maybe there's something in today's lesson that I neglected to put in my talk. So, I'm going to look for that. I definitely feel in today's lesson I need to redo my conclusion more along the lines of today's lesson. This month's article is based on a publisher's desk column in our magazine Hinduism Today, and focuses on how enduring happiness can be achieved through understanding the nature of desire, refining our desires, developing a religious nature, and experiencing our inner joy through the spiritual practices of meditation, devotion, and service to others. The non-mystical approach to happiness is that if you attain what you desire, you are happy. And if you don't, you are unhappy. Win the lottery, get a great job, and you are happy. Miss the lottery, don't get a great job, and you are miserable. Webster tells us that happiness is the emotion evoked by success or by the prospect of possessing what one desires. A reflective person knows that this kind of happiness is fleeting. When we finally possess what we have been desiring, somehow the happiness soon fades, and before we know it, we are back to our dissatisfied self again, desiring something new to give us that elusive happiness. The cycle of desire, fulfillment, pleasure, loss, pain, suffering, that is the cycle of seeking happiness in outer things, be they possessions or people. In other words, when we finally possess what we desire, somehow the happiness soon fades, and before we know it, we are back to our dissatisfied self again, desiring something new to give us that elusive happiness. What is the solution? Some say, give up desire. Desire is what is causing the whole problem. It drives us to get what we want, and when the happiness of that getting eventually wears off, we start all over again with a new desire. So if you can get rid of desire, you solve the whole problem, right? Guru Deva looked at it differently. He said, quote, desire is life, and the reason we desire things is because we are alive. Desire is energy expressing itself, unquote. The only way you could get rid of desire would be to get rid of life. Even if the physical body is passed on, even if we don't have a physical body, we are still alive, still active, creative, and motivated by what? Desire. So trying to get rid of desire is not really a solution to the cycle of desire and fulfillment. So there's an interesting aphorism. I'm not going to put this in the article, but I put it here to read. Famous aphorism from Gurudeva in Cognizant Ability on Desire. It's kind of deep, but really useful to try and ponder. It reads, the seed of desire is a false concept in relationship to corresponding objects. The conscious mind throws into its subconscious a series of erroneous thoughts based upon a false concept. This creates a deep-rooted desire or complex. Single out the seed of desire by disregarding all other corresponding erroneous thoughts. Then destroy that seed through understanding its relation in itself and to all other corresponding thoughts. The deep-rooted desire or complex will then vanish. So that's pretty profound, but the essence of it is in the first sentence. The seed of desire is a false concept in relation to corresponding objects. So what does that mean? It means we've developed a concept that, gee, if I only had this, if only this was true, or if I was only in this situation or that situation, I'd be so happy, so content. That's a concept that's somehow developed in our mind, you know. If we're young, maybe the advertising agency put it in there. That's what they're paid to do. You know, they put these concepts in, and they're very good at it. And so everyone thinks if they buy what is being advertised, they'll be happy. So that's the seed of desire, is a false concept in relation to corresponding objects. Of course, we can see through that one. But there's more complex ones that can develop in our mind as we grow up. We get these concepts in our mind about what will make us happy. So that's the false concept, that a certain situation in the outside world is what is going to give us happiness. It's good to have goals in the outside world. We're not saying don't have goals, don't have ambitions. But we're saying, if you think that fulfilling that ambition is going to give you the happiness and you'll be unhappy until that happens, that's a false concept. You can be happy right now. So there's another concept, since I was doing something spontaneous, there's another concept I thought of putting in, a very simple kind of bottom line summary. The usual concept is desire comes from getting. We get something and that'll make us happy. Happiness comes from getting. The normal concept is happiness comes from getting something. If I can get this, if I can get this, I'll be happy. Whereas the essence of this is happiness comes from giving something. That's a simple way of looking at it. It's through giving to others, and this is particularly brought out in the daily lesson, that we become happy, not through getting, but through giving. So, thinking of putting that in there, not through getting, but through giving, you know, turn it around. It's a simple phrase to remember. So that's Gurudeva's bottom line, is through giving to others, we can be happy. If we simply look at happiness as from getting things, we won't be happy. In fact, it's one of the suggestions I make to those who seem to not be totally fulfilled and aren't parents. You know, parents have plenty of children in their lives to deal with, grandchildren too, but for single people or married people who don't have children, quite often if there's something missing in their life, I say, well, do some volunteer work for children. And that's the basic idea. It's one example of giving. That through giving to others and getting our mind more involved in other people, we become happier. Through being selfish and focusing on getting, happiness is always elusive. So back to our formal article here. Back to Gurudeva's idea. Remember, we're talking about desire. You can't get rid of desire because desire is life. And you can't get rid of life. Thus, instead of trying to get rid of desire, Gurudeva suggests we focus instead on uplifting our consciousness and changing what we desire. So we can't get rid of it, but we can change it. We can refine it. That is how we solve the problem, by channeling or transmuting our energy, desiring things that are more refined. Instead of desiring just to make ourselves happy, we desire to make our family and friends happy too. That is a higher desire. Going to school is a way of channeling energy. As a child, first we memorize, bringing the energies up out of the chakras below the Muladhara into the Muladhara chakra. This is through memorization. That's why schooling is so important. It's transmuting energy. And that's why memory is always focused on first in school, memorizing. Then in the Svadhisthana chakra, we reason, we learn how to think. Then we learn how to push things through and accomplish them through the force of will, the Manipura chakra. We are pulling the energy up into memory, reason, and willpower in the normal process of schooling. Thus, schooling is important, for it trains us to lift our consciousness, refine our character, and harness the baser desires. Cultural practices such as singing, dancing, and playing a musical instrument are also effective ways of refining desire. They help raise the energies even further than the basic studying in school. In doing so, we raise our consciousness and learn to avoid the grosser states of mind, doubt, depression, discouragement, and circumvent the base problem of desires leading ultimately to sorrow. The goal is to claim the spiritual happiness that is inside of us. Happiness is already part of our inner self, but we need to learn how to experience that part of us that is always happy. Once we have refined our desires through academic studies and cultural practices, we are a religious enough person to take the next step toward experiencing enduring happiness. Our religion gives us inner ways and outer ways to accomplish this. The monistic or meditative way is to turn within in meditation, go deep into the lotus of the heart, and experience our inner self, our inner light, our spiritual energy. That makes us truly happy. There is also the theistic or devotional way. We come to the temple and open ourselves to the blessings of the deities. We come in an unhappy state, receive the blessings, and go away uplifted and happy. Why? Because we have connected with our inner self through external worship. We have connected with the same blissful state that can be achieved through meditation. These are two ways to internalize our awareness, to move our awareness into our spiritual being. Gurudeva also gives us a third way. Quote, if you want to attain happiness, make others happy. Unquote. That is a wonderful statement. Quite often we are unhappy because we are self-centered. We are in a selfish state of mind, concerned only about our life, our problems, our challenges. Life is not treating us fairly, we think, so we are unhappy. What's the antidote? Do something for other people. Try to make them happy. Here's a story that I once heard and never forgot, as it illustrates so well the challenges individuals face in striving to overcome unhappiness. A woman suffering from severe depression was told by her psychiatrist, I have a remedy that is a sure cure for your depression if you follow it. go out and help other people. Make other people happy. Of course, she would not do it. We might say she actually wanted to be depressed. Or we could say she was stuck in that state of mind, that habit state of mind, unable to change. Recently, a devotee wrote to me for advice, quote, "The doctor has put Dad on an even stronger pain medication. He spends his days in bed. He is so very depressed. I pray daily that I can brighten his day in some small way. I offer to massage him. Sometimes he is open. Sometimes he just wants to be left alone. My husband and I try very hard to care for him in the best way we know how. Most times I feel it is never good enough because Dad is so closed down, so critical, and angry. I continually look for ways to give and to serve each day. Please offer advice and encouragement." Sound familiar? An aging parent is in a negative state of mind to one degree or another and refuses to budge from that state of mind, no matter what the children do. Here was my advice. Caring for your father-in-law, it is enough to do the kindly act. Whether it is appreciated or not does not matter from a karmic point of view. You are creating good karma by fulfilling dharma. In other words, don't allow yourself to become disappointed when you can't change a lifetime of mental habits of a person just by smiling, being nice, and helping out. He is who he is, or she is who she is. All you can do is your duty. Do it to the best of your ability. If he or she is uplifted and smiles because of it, or remains grumpy and depressed, don't let that be the measure of your success. The measure of success is doing your duty and doing it with love. It is okay for you to be happy, even if your parent isn't happy. Even though you live in the same house, you should not let your father's or mother's negativity, depression, and criticalness be contagious. This same principle applies to everything we do for others in life. Sometimes parents get discouraged because they do the best they can with their children, and the children don't respond in a way that seems reasonable. "Look, our daughter didn't follow my good advice despite all my love and attention. She is still doing the same old stupid things." The parents feel sad, but why should they? However, a wiser approach is to feel that you have done your duty to the other family members and earned good karma by doing the right things in a loving way. Therefore, there is no need for their negativity to prevent you from being happy, just as we don't have to be ill when those close to us fall sick. Let's look at Gurudeva in this regard. He gave so much advice and loving attention over the years. If he became unhappy every time someone didn't take his advice and respond positively, he would have been terribly unhappy. However, as we know, Gurudeva enjoyed enduring happiness no matter how others responded to his attention or advice. Being surrounded by family and friends is important. It is a natural and positive state to live in. It helps us live a fulfilling dharmic life. However, the problem comes if we rely on family and friends to make us happy. This is a false concept. We want our happiness coming from ourselves. Then we can share that happiness with our family and friends. Someone should never fall into thinking, "I am unhappy by myself. Somehow, if I get married, if I have children, or if I have lots of friends, I will be happy." Does not work that way. Any temporary happiness soon wears away in the old cycle of fulfillment of desire. We get married. If we are an unhappy person, we may be happy for a while, but eventually we will fall back into the state of unhappiness. Because that is our mental habit, the mode our mind operates in. That habit does not go away just because we associate with new people. It also does not go away by our getting new possessions. The happiness derived from acquiring things, in fact, lasts for even a shorter time. New computer, new car, redecorate the home. That is fulfilling for a few months, maybe a year for the home. But eventually the charm wears off. The state of unhappiness only goes away permanently by our remolding our consciousness and the way we look at life, by refining our character to the point where we naturally live in a state of fulfilled contentment all of the time, regardless of external circumstances. In conclusion, begin the regular practice of reflecting on your state of happiness or unhappiness. If you find yourself being unhappy, let go of the cause in the outer world that is the source. Change your perspective to the mystical one that happiness is always within us. Then claim your inner happiness through the spiritual practices of meditation, devotion, or service to others. As Gurudeva says, life is meant to be lived joyously. Okay, that's where it stands at the moment. And we get our daily lesson, which must have something important here to stick in the talk. How to be happy. Look in the mirror. You have created your face through your many thoughts that have accumulated through this lifetime. Ask yourself, am I happy or am I looking for others to make me happy? Allow yourself to be kind. Allow yourself to express the qualities, the beautiful qualities of your soul. Your happiness then will come from within yourself, along with a deep contentment and inner peace and joy. Only a moment of thinking kindly about someone and making a plan that will enable you to help your fellow man, even just a little bit, will awaken from your soul that deep inner satisfaction, that depth of security you are really seeking. On the other hand, if you allow your mind to dwell in the realm of critical thinking, in the realm of gossiping, without the thought of helping others, you will feel insecure, unhappy. Nothing that could happen will bring you an inner satisfaction. You will be constantly desirous of acquiring, and that which you do acquire will not be satisfying to you. Why? Because there will be no love in your heart. If you find yourself in that state of mind, turn the energies around and find the quietness within you through being kind, being generous, being helpful. The doing brings its own reward. Only in the accomplishment of being big enough to understand the experience of life that others go through, being tall enough to overlook the many, many things that you could take issue with and perhaps retaliate for, only in acquiring that depth which comes from your soul can you truly find inner happiness and peace. Go out into the world this week and let your light shine through your kind thoughts, but let each thought manifest itself in a physical deed of doing something for someone else. Lift their burdens just a little bit, and unknowingly perhaps, you may lift something that is burdening your mind. You erase and wipe clean the mirror of your own mind through helping another. We call this karma yoga, the deep practice of unwinding through service the selfish, self-centered, egotistical vasanas of the lower nature that have been generated for many, many lives and which bind the soul in darkness. That's a pretty good sentence. Let me read that again. We call this karma yoga, the deep practice of unwinding through service, the selfish, self-centered, egotistical vasanas of the lower nature that have been generated for many, many lives and which bind the soul in darkness. I have to use that one. Through service and kindness, you can unwind the subconscious mind and gain a clear understanding of all laws of life. Your soul will shine forth. You will be that peace. You will radiate that inner happiness and be truly secure simply by practicing being kind in thought, word, and deed. a sure indication of the manifestation of the soul nature on the physical plane is consideration for other people's feelings, consideration for other people's state of mind, which means appreciating their good qualities and overlooking their qualities that need improvement. Someone who is considerate is understanding. Those who are not considerate don't understand, and don't understand they don't understand. They don't understand and they are not considerate and not appreciative because they are wrapped up in their individual ego. Yet they expect everyone to be considerate of them. So, the bottom line, happiness doesn't come from getting, comes from giving. Om Namah Shivaya. Have a wonderful faith. Good morning, everyone. Have a new series today. This is the Thirukkural, working on a synopsis, a summary for each of the first 38 chapters. Those are the chapters in the introduction and the first section on Dharma. So the idea is it would be useful in for youth who are studying the Thirukkural. Sometimes it's hard to grasp just from the poetry the essence of the chapter, you know, particularly on first reading. Poetry can be that way, so this would serve as an introduction, give the main points in the chapter in prose form. Chapter 1, Praising God. The prologue, introduction, consists of four chapters, and certainly the choice of the four subjects it covers shows what Tiruvalluvar considered to be of the highest importance in living a meaningful life. Thus, it is no surprise that the first chapter is devoted to God, or more specifically, to the worship of God. In praising God, Valluvar provides a description of a different quality of God in each verse. God is the source of all, pure knowledge, within the lotus of the heart, free of desire and aversion, immutable, controller of the five senses, incomparable, and an ocean of virtue. God possesses eight infinite powers and holy feet that are to be worshipped. Learning is an activity the importance of which is stressed in many chapters of the Quran. Here the poet chose to make the point that when education is completely secular, it has no value. Education is only worthwhile when it includes a religious education that stresses that life needs to center around the worship of God. Everyone seeks to have a life that is free from distress and suffering. How is this accomplished? Valluvar states that the only way this can be achieved is through drawing near to, worshipping, and taking refuge at God's holy feet. The idea of reincarnation is presented in the image of a boundless ocean of births. Karma is also introduced as delusion's dual deeds of good and bad. Both of these can be overcome, but only through the worship of God, the poet tells us. Chapter 2, The Importance of Rain, something we can relate to on Kauai. The earth is essential to our spiritual development. This is because it provides the soul a place where it can incarnate in a physical body, interact with other human beings, and in so doing work through its karma and dharma, and thereby evolve spiritually over a period of many, many lives. In The Importance of Rain, Tiruvalluvar stresses how central rain is to the existence of humans on earth. It is the presence of rain that allows mankind to live on planet earth. Thus the basis for the selection of rain as the second of the four introductory chapters is clear. Though oceans cover more than 70% of the earth's surface, their waters cannot serve to grow the food we need. Rain falling from the clouds is the only water that can provide food to mankind. In this regard, rain is indeed amrita, the nectar of life. And not only does rain produce food, it also is itself food. The activity of farmers is totally dependent on rain. If rain does not fall, farmers do not plow their fields. Vallabhar continues by stating that without rain, eventually worship of God in daily pujas and annual festivals would also cease, as well as the charity of householders and the austerity of ascetics. Vallabhar concludes that no life on earth can exist without water, and water's ceaseless flow is not possible without rain. The poet gives us a greater awareness of and gratitude for the presence of rain on earth, and perhaps even catalyzes us to reflect on the overall ecology of our planet. Chapter 3, The Greatness of Renunciates. The mere presence on earth of men who have renounced the world in pursuit of truth encourages others to strive harder to make spiritual progress. It is a source of spiritual courage to others. This is why scriptures exalt renunciates above every other good and state that their greatness illumines the world. With this in mind, it becomes clear why Tiruvallavar chose renunciates and their greatness as the third of the four introductory topics he considered to be of the highest importance in living a meaningful life. Vallabhar compares the difficulty of describing the greatness of renunciates to the clearly challenging task of counting the number of humans who have ever lived. And he insightfully describes the perspective of those who renounce as having reflected upon the dual nature of things, the fact that the pursuits of the world yield not only joy, but also sorrow, not only pleasure, but also pain. The poet stresses that renunciates have a strong will that enables them to harness their five senses, accomplish difficult tasks, and control the world. Vallabhar states that their words are both prophetic and powerful, meaning that they contain knowledge about the future and can also effectively chastise others into living a more dharmic life. And finally, he mentions that renunciates have a great compassion for all life. Chapter 4, Asserting Virtue's Power. In describing the many aspects of life in the Tirukkural, Tiruvallavar constantly stresses the importance of living a life that is pious, meaning that it follows virtue and fulfills duty. Thus we would expect, as one of the four introductory subjects considered to be of the highest importance in living a meaningful life, he would choose the topic of dharma, aram, virtue, and its power and importance. In Asserting Virtue's Power, a few of Vallabhar's verses point out the practical consequences, that the fulfillment of virtue produces riches, while its neglect brings ruin. The poet also explains the religious benefits that virtue yields honor in heaven. He further goes on to explain that the benefits of practicing virtue, which are called merit or punyam, carry forward from one life to the next and create a better future birth for us. And finally, he explains the benefits of virtuous actions in a purely philosophical sense, that they alone abound in true joy. Tiruvallavar answers the pragmatic question, what should we do to fulfill virtue, by telling us to be unremitting in the doing of good deeds. In fact, to use our might, our willpower, to accomplish them by every possible means. He He further encourages us to do good every day by saying it will end further rebirths. He insightfully states that the essence of virtue is keeping the mind free of impurity, and then goes on to list four common sources of impurity which are to be carefully avoided: envy, anger, greed, and unsavory speech. The final guideline he provides us with is that virtue is what should be done, and vice is what should not be done. Okay, four chapters. To be continued. 34 more to go. Have a wonderful faith.